Hello, this is Bricks and Mortar from EG. Today we're talking to Ralph Charwood, Deliva APC expert coach, mock interview assessor, RICS chair and APC assessor. He joins me today to discuss his experience of assessing APC candidates and what happens when a candidate is referred, or in other words, doesn't pass the APC assessment, which is formed of two parts, the written submission and the follow-on interview. You're listening to Sarah Jackman. Ralph, thanks very much indeed for joining me today. As an assessor, it must be incredibly disappointing to have to refer someone. Can you tell me how that chimes with your own experience?
Of course it is. The candidates have committed so much time and effort that it's going to be extremely disappointing to be referred. Also, the decision is subjective. So many candidates leave the room thinking they've done okay and don't actually know whether they've passed or not, so it can come to many as a very disappointing surprise.
Okay, and when we're talking about referral, what proportion of people are we talking about each year?
As far as I know, there are no official data released by RICS, but anecdotally it's as low as 50% for building surveying, mm-hmm. and probably somewhere between 60 and 70% for the commercial property pathways. My own personal experience is that first-timers are far more likely to be referred, and those who resit generally have a much better pass rate.
Right, okay. And just to be clear, there's no set quota in terms of people that the RICS are trying to pass each year. How does it work? It presumably varies from year to year.
Absolutely. There is no quota. We're not told or even given guidance. We're just given the papers and a set of criteria, and it's pass or refer. What I do know is on those days when I hand in four passes back to the front desk, the RICS team are absolutely delighted. Mm. They see the candidates, they see how nervous, they know how much work they've put into it. They are very pleased and very supportive when a panel hands in four passes.
Yeah. Okay, and before we go a bit further into the reasons for referral, can you just talk us through the criteria that candidates need to meet in order to pass the APC?
Assuming that the submission is compliant, so it's all based on the submission,
yeah.
So that's an appropriate spread of competencies, declared to the right level, the right amount of CPD, then the interview is designed to determine effectively four things. Whether the candidate can express themselves clearly in an oral presentation and interview, that they can demonstrate in support of their written submission their understanding of the knowledge gained and competences achieved during their training, that they have an acceptable understanding of the role and responsibilities of a chartered surveyor, and finally, that they can apply their professional and technical skills to benefit those who employ their services. Now, the assessment is judged, in the words of RICS, holistically, i.e. both the submission and the interview are taken into consideration. The exception for this is ethics, rules of conduct and professionalism, which is determined solely during the interview. So, as a panel, we are assessing your general level of ability and testing that you meet the minimum levels of competence and your understanding of professional conduct. Those are all in documents provided by the RICS, and they are effectively our Bible, our kind of go-to book to determine whether we felt you've met those levels. Now, it's not just about technical competence. We are also checking that you would be a good ambassador for the profession, that you're aware of the professional and commercial implications of your work, that you understand clients' and employers' objectives, that you have up-to-date knowledge of legal matters, and this is really important, that you have the confidence to work unsupervised. And that means knowing when you need to go ask for help, that means knowing when to look something up and when you can actually give advice without checking with somebody.
And do those levels of attainment vary year on year, or is it a fairly consistent level that's applied?
No, they don't vary. The underlying technical knowledge might. So at level one, at the moment, we expect people to be up to date on the new version of Surveying Safely. If relevant, they should know the Code of Leasing Business Premises, England and Wales. So level one technicals move year to year, but there is no pass mark. It does not change, for example, like it might do in A levels. Broadly, a candidate who passed 5 years ago would pass today, and someone who is referred this last session probably would have been referred 5 years ago and will be referred next year. So it's, I would say, on my panels, it feels fairly consistent.
Yeah, okay. And can you talk us through the common reasons for referral?
The big one is not being able to demonstrate level three. Now, level three is about doing something, but also being able to show a depth of understanding, which provides the bedrock for providing that reasoned advice. As an example, I had a candidate on one of my panels who was doing lettings on a building, and he told us that they were outside the security of tenure provisions of the 1954 Landlord and Tenant Act. Mm-hmm. When we asked to explain why those lettings were outside the Act, the candidate was unable to really explain it and referred back to needing to speak to a lawyer, couldn't even give us the pros and cons between inside and outside the Act. Now, that may have just been nerves on the day, but for landlord and tenant declared to level three, that, along with other points, was ground for referral.
Yeah.
Now, the key to the APC, to my mind, is understanding that level one technical knowledge underpins being able to provide reasoned advice. You may see in more senior members of your team that they go straight to an answer, but the reality is that they probably know, if you dig into it, why they're doing these things, and they've got the technical knowledge to back up that very quick recommendation or decision. Now, the APC interview, therefore, can be thought of as being like a client meeting, where you have an intelligent client who perhaps doesn't know everything about property, but can ask really good probing questions about what your advice is and why you're advising that. It is also a very intense session. We have to cover an awful lot in just 1 hour. So strong level one knowledge and suitable breadth and depth of experience might not be enough. Good interview technique is essential. Now, this requires practice, ideally through mock interviews with assessors who know the current structure and format. But the more you do it, the more you are tested on answering in a very short but structured way, the better your chances at the APC.
Just looking really at the sort of practicalities, I mean, what form does a referral take? I mean, would a candidate find out on the day, or is it reported at a later date? How does it work?
Okay, so nobody finds out on the day. Mm-hmm. The very final part, I mean, I chair, the very final part of the interview is you being told that you will hear from RICS within 5 working days.
Right.
You will hear 5 working days. If you've passed, you'll be told you've passed. As an aside, don't look at the RICS website and assume that because you haven't popped up on there, you haven't passed. The RICS website is updated quite a long time in arrears, but you should get an email. Personal experience is that people get it quite late in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. If you haven't passed, you will be told you've been referred, and that is then followed by a referral report, which can actually, I've had instances of it taking as long as a month to be sent through,
okay.
Although most of them are actually quicker.
Okay. And what sort of form does that referral report take? I mean, are the candidates given quite detailed feedback on the areas that they need to work on? I mean, what can they draw from it?
Okay, so the referral report is in a fixed format. It's not free form. There's lots of headings. And it must set out the reasons for referral. But a well-written referral report should also elaborate and provide a good overall assessment of the strengths and weaknesses of the candidate, including what they should do if they choose to resit. Now, personal experience is that some candidates find their referral report to be a bit sort of nitpicking, setting out lots of minor points.
Mm.
Now, RICS encourage panels to be thorough with their referral reports, and not all answers are equally important, but I think it's very useful for the candidate to see the full picture, and also to remind them of what they may have said in the interview, which it's going so fast that often candidates can't quite remember what they said, whereas you may well have a panel of three people making notes. So it's, yes, you did say that. For example, recently there was a candidate who got picked up on saying that the RICS stood for the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, and it's the Royal Institution, and the panel picked that up. Now, it's nitpicking, but it is, to my mind, something you do need to know. If you're going to join the RICS, you should know what it stands for.
Mm.
The other thing that I think the referral report, in addition to just that breadth of referral points, I think it gives first-time candidates, especially those that perhaps don't have the support of a large organisation, a view as to just how much detail and accuracy can be required by a panel. By that, I mean the exact name of the Red Book, the exact name of a particular act or guidance note. I'm not saying that not knowing them is an automatic referral, but I would advise all candidates, know the names of the important documents, know the names of the act, know the dates, because if you read a referral report, often it picks up on little things. And also, panels are impressed when people can remember, for example, definition of market value.
Mm. So just making sure that you're absolutely belt and braces with all of those things, and in ensuring that a lot of those sort of minor points don't come together to create a referral.
Correct.
Okay. Let's think then about where the candidate goes next. What options do candidates have to appeal a referral?
So you have 21 days from the date of your referral report to appeal. There is a form on the RICS website. You fill that in, you pay an appeal fee, which in the UK is currently £100, and you submit the report.
What do candidates have to bear in mind if they're thinking of lodging an appeal?
Well, the key thing to bear in mind is that the appeals panel are not resitting the appeal, and they will not overrule a referral based on opinions on a sort of he said, she said basis. The appeal, and you can think of it in professional life as being analogous to a judicial review, the appeal will only succeed on administrative or procedural matters. They are not second guessing the panel. They won't look at questions and go, well, that was an, you know, I might have passed for that response. What they're doing is they're checking that the assessment followed the appropriate structure and rules.
Mm.
Now, having been involved personally in some appeals, my recommendation is usually accept the decision and move on.
Yeah.
There are no official data on the success rate of appeals, but I believe it to be extremely low.
Okay. So assuming then that a candidate looks more positively at resitting and going down that route, what would a candidate need to do to resit?
So practically, they need to resubmit their submission in line with published dates. They need to make sure that their submission remains compliant. So that means, have they done more CPD, because obviously that's on a pro rata basis. They need to make sure that their ethics certificate and test is within 12 months, and the case study has to have been live within 24 months of submission. So all of those boxes need to be ticked. Also, the referral report might state that a new case study is required. This does need refreshing, although obviously the panel won't actually know that the candidate has been referred.
Yeah, and perhaps we could just pick up on that. So the criteria have just changed, so that assessors no longer know if the candidate has been referred. What difference has that made to the referral process?
Yes, just to clarify, for first-time candidates, you used to have to state whether you'd been referred or not, and as a panel, we used to see a copy of the referral report.
Mm.
Now, it's all changed. Candidate doesn't have to state referred or not, and we don't see referral reports. So what that means is, and RICS guidance to all panels is very clear, all assessments are treated as first time assessment. Personally, I'm fine with that. There is a slight downside for candidates in that under the old system, at least you had some degree of certainty as to the questions you might get, because typically you might retest stuff in the referral report. So what that does mean is if you've been referred under the new system, make sure you know the stuff in the referral report, but it is just as likely to come up as any other point. One of the ones that often got picked up on was zoning. And if it was in the referral report, you kind of knew that there was going to be a zoning question.
Okay.
You know, next time, under the new system, might not come up at all. Overall, I think it's probably a positive.
And is there a time frame that candidates need to leave between the initial referral and resitting, or is it fairly open-ended depending on how the candidate feels and what needs to be done in order to get their submission back up to scratch?
So you are eligible to resit for the next session. So there are two sessions a year, so that basically is a 6-month interval. But I would always recommend speak to your counsellor, supervisor, and whoever's helping, work out if this is realistic.
Mm.
Now, if the referral has highlighted a severe lack of breadth or depth in your experience, being honest as a team and with yourself, you might think it's actually better to wait a year if you cannot secure that experience within 6 months. If it's some niggly level ones that you think, you know, hit the books, and it might be, as I said earlier, the detail and accuracy point, you realise that you've just got to, as I say, hit the books, really remember the stuff that you know, but you didn't know it quite to the level of detail the panel wanted. It might be that actually you can sit it at the next session.
And really then, how should candidates be preparing for a resit? What do they need to do?
So this is easy for me to say, but I think firstly and most importantly, don't take the news too hard. The APC can be compared with job interviews or pitching for new business. You know, you won't win everyone every time. Plenty of referrals that I've been involved with were on the margins, and quite a few passes were on the margins. Now, hopefully you received a decent referral report that has outlined the areas of weakness and given you some guidance as to what else you need to do. So read that thoroughly. Be honest with yourself. Many refers candidates are surprised by the level of detail the panel might expect, and they thought that relatively superficial answers would suffice, and I'd say generally they don't. It might be on technical points or interview style or both. So whatever is highlighted, you need to seek to address that. I'd say having a study buddy or having mock interviews are two of the really best ways to practice. And I suppose the final thing is don't go back in 6 months or 12 months later with any less preparation than you did for the first time. Don't sort of think, oh, I know that. I think you've got to start fresh and make sure that you know everything again. Yeah. Because just because you weren't referred on a particular point the last time, it will be completely reassessed next time. So it's do everything plus cover the areas of weakness.
Yeah, okay. And we touched on the supervisor or the counsellor a few minutes ago. Can you just expand on the role that they can play in that preparation?
Yes. Firstly, the counsellor and or supervisor should be supportive. They are invariably senior to the candidate and should have some sort of management emotional intelligence there. Then considering both the referral report and your own reflection on areas of improvement, you and your counsellor and supervisor need to identify what to do over the next 6 months or 12 months or more. It might be CPD based if there are knowledge gaps, or it might be work related if there are experience gaps. What I definitely and strongly would recommend is that you need regular update meetings during that period. If you're resitting in 6 months' time, you can't sit down again after 5 months. So you need regular meetings just to make sure that whatever program you've all agreed is achieving its goals.
Yep. And then final thoughts. I mean, what advice would you give to candidates for turning what I would presume is a fairly sort of negative experience and presumably a huge disappointment, really turning that into a positive?
It's difficult, but life isn't necessarily easy. Getting referred is a setback, that's all. And I'd say those around you are more likely to judge how you deal with it than the referral itself. So try and reframe this as an opportunity to demonstrate maturity and grow as a professional. Now, it might seem like a huge deal at the moment. You've spent years preparing for it, but in years to come, you will look back and see, in the context of other challenges that you will have faced, you'll have seen it as a minor setback and hopefully one that you successfully overcame.
Yeah, no, I think those are very encouraging and positive words. Ralph Charwood, thank you very much indeed for talking us through the process today. It's been really insightful. Thank you. You've been listening to Bricks and Mortar from EG with Sarah Jackman. For more information on developing a career in real estate, see the archive of the Bricks and Mortar series at podbean.com and the APC and Mainly for Students series at egi.co.uk.